Welcome to Businesswomen Australia's radio show, proud station sponsor. I'm Sally Barker. Each week I'll be talking with a leading member of BWA. These inspiring business leaders are very generous in sharing their stories, insights and expertise. Joining me on the show today is Lynn Hawkins, Company Director. How are you, Lynn?
I'm very well, thanks, Sally. Thanks for having me.
Now, today we're talking about diversity in business and a few different headings under that. Diversity within, you know, your products and your services and, you know, those kinds of things, but also gender diversity.
That's right. Well, when we talk about diversity and that diversity is good for companies, there's a really strong view around the differences that, you know, we bring to the table as human beings, whether or not it's gender, cultural, racial, ethnicity, sexual orientation. It could be age. It could be around mobility. So, you know, when we talk about diversity and that diversity is good for businesses, and we are starting to find this, that they're the sorts of things we're talking about in terms of the people element and the makeup of your team and the makeup of your leadership.
So how important is it for business owners to understand this?
Well, look, what we've found is that businesses that are more diverse actually get better financial results. There's a correlation between, particularly if we look at some of the recent research has actually shown that racial and ethnicity, the more diversity in the leadership team and within the company, is correlated 35% more likely with higher financial results.
Is that right?
Mm. And in gender diversity, it's a 15% more likely to be in the higher above average quartile. So, you know, the results are there. So we can't argue, is diversity a good thing? We know diversity is actually a really good thing. And then when we look at, well, what does that mean in terms of leadership? You start to really question around, particularly the bigger your company gets, you know, what are the views around the table that are making strategic decisions? And is there a good representation of viewpoints? The greater the diversity of viewpoints, the more likely a deeper and better informed decision is made, you know. So, you know, we look at diversity and we say, well, research is showing us that it improves your customer orientation. Now, anyone in business knows that those companies that do best are the ones that are very customer-centric. So a customer orientation means that we're actually got more people around the table that are thinking about the different needs, the different requirements that various target segments might want. So again, it makes sense that if we have different people from different backgrounds, different cultures, different sexual orientations, that they're going to have a different view that is coming. So a more deeper decision or better informed decision can be made. Employee satisfaction is another thing that we've found through the research, that people enjoy working in diverse environments, and the stories that they share, the comradeship that they have, and the breaking down of the barriers that are between genders or cultures or whatever the differences might be, really make life more interesting and enjoyable. So greater satisfaction can come from the growing and the learning and the comradeship that can come from diversity. And of course, the decision-making, you know, better decision-making comes from diversity. So all those things combine, and that's why we're seeing that diversity leads to better financial results.
So if you're thinking about going into business, there's lots of things you need to think about, you need to consider, you know, in terms of the planning. Is this an area that is often overlooked?
I think so. I think, you know, when we look at a customer and we're, I think one thing that's quite encouraging is that a lot of businesses that are starting out or that are repositioning have recognised the need to actually define their target market, their customer segment, their customer avatar and persona. Now, when you start going into the personality and the psychological attributes of a customer, you have to start also thinking about what is the makeup of them, you know, what's the demographic, you know, what is their education, what is their culture background, you know, what, you know, start to get a really good understanding of what are the drivers then that come behind that, so that you can really develop your product and service to meet their needs, and you can communicate in a way that's going to resonate with them. So from a marketing point of view, it's a really key part too, is understanding the diversity of your customer base. But what I'd really like to talk about is gender diversity, because I think it's something that's a real issue. You know, we've been invited to so many roundtable discussions about, you know, this glass ceiling, which I've personally never experienced, but is very real in the experiences of other women in business. I mean, the statistics tell us that women they comprise 46% of the workforce, they're only holding 14% of chair roles, they're only holding 23% of directorships, and there's only 15% of CEOs that are women in the last sort of round of research that was done. And on the ASX 2000, I think the latest results are showing that there's around 23% of directorships held by women. Interestingly, those are the ones that are doing very well financially too. So, you know, the stats are not looking brilliant for women in leadership roles. But it's not just women that diversity is needed. Now, what we've found is, what is stopping women from taking up those roles, and what's stopping women from you know, being able to put their hand up for those leadership roles. And I think a lot of it is to do with their need for flexibility and their desire to be involved in the strategic roles and not getting the opportunity for whatever reason. And so a lot of women are leaving the workforce as a result of that and are going out and setting up their own businesses. There's a huge shift. In fact, I think of a lot of the new businesses that are starting up, a greater percentage of them are being started up by women. Mm. So we're losing talent.
Yeah.
We're losing this incredible investment that we have for these highly educated, well-experienced women that are coming through the workforce and that are starting to work their way up through those middle-level management roles and then exiting a business. And this is a concern.
I did read a research study maybe about 6 months ago in terms of women applying for those higher jobs and men applying for the same job. Now, if a woman reads the selection criteria, if she doesn't 100% think she can fill that criteria, she won't apply for that job. However, men, if they're about 50 or 60%, they'll still put their application in and really believe that they can get that even though they don't hit those marks. So in terms of what... it's a generalisation, but from this research shows that men are more willing to apply and think, and that might be the way that it has been structured, and you did mention that glass ceiling. We don't think we can get there, so we don't apply to get there, maybe.
It's an interesting one, is that self-belief. I've been one of those interesting women that has always believed when I put my hat in the ring for something, even if I haven't had experience, I've always gone for it because I've always been able to back myself. And I get surprised when I see these other women who I think are far more competent than me and more experienced, who might not go for something. In fact, talking to one of our Diamond members in Queensland recently, Balveen, she's developing a board ready program which will be launching soon, because she's on she's had incredible board experience. She's on some pretty major boards, and a lot of women have said to her, how did you get on that board? And she said, well, I put my hat in the ring and I got that role. In fact, why aren't you putting your hat in the ring for board roles? Oh, I'm not quite ready yet. And she's been flabbergasted with this. So she's developed a program, a half-day sort of dive in, to help people identify, well, where's their passion and their strengths? What kinds of boards would they bring value to? And how to position themselves ready for those kind of roles, which is really, she thinks, a lot around actually being strategic and putting and letting those boards know when a position comes up. I'm really keen on this, you know, so let me know if there's an opportunity that comes up, and I'd love to meet with the board around what that could be. In a lot of cases, that's how men have actually operated. That's certainly how I always did it. If I wanted to go on a board, I'd go and have a chat to the chair of the board and say, well, I know next time something comes up, you know, consider me in the mix. And I think that's a confidence thing. You know, we we take confidence for granted, and it's about backing yourself, knowing that you might not know everything that you need to know, but when you get in that role, whatever the job is, you'll be able to learn it. Mm. And you'll be able to succeed and be successful and competent in the same way that you are in the role you are now.
Mm.
So it is an interesting thing, but it's also about workplaces and what workplaces can do to hold on to their women. And I think flexibility and mobility is key. We have the technology now to be able to say to women and men who take on parenting roles, or who might want to spend some time out to write a book or whatever it might be, look, you know, we don't want to lose you. We've got the technology that can enable you to job share or work from home or go part-time or, you know, be able to pursue whatever it is you wanted to pursue without losing you altogether. And look, I had a great employer at HLB Man Judd. For a couple of years, I said, I'll work in this role for a couple of years. Towards the last 6 months, I had some real issues at home. You know, I had a teenager who was going through a really tough time. And that organisation said to me, look, we've got the technology. If you want to work from home or if you want to go part-time, you know, we want to support you so that we can get to the end of this contract. We don't want to lose you with all these stresses. And, you know, I was able to go part-time and then take that role to a point where then we were able to employ someone to then come in and do, as we'd planned to do, the next phase of implementation and coordination. So it's about keeping those communication lines open, using the technology that we have for a mobile workforce that's enabling us to keep and hold, you know, the diversity and the talent that we have in our companies.
Mm.
And that's an exciting time when you see that there are even the large corporations putting in place policies that are really around that and supporting diversity and flexibility. And it's good for the fellas too, you know, and there's a lot of same-sex couples now that are bringing up their own families. It's not a, you know, parenting leave isn't just an issue for women. Things have changed and we need to change as businesses to accommodate that so that we hold on to those great people that we don't want to lose.
Mm, it's accommodating and it's also understanding you do need to support.
Yep,
you do.
You need
support and value.
Well, it makes business sense too. You've invested in these people and if they're doing a good job, the cost of actually replacing them, the cost of churn to business is quite phenomenal. Mm. So it makes business sense too, but it also makes sense from a values point of view. And it's a nicer place to work when people feel valued.
Mm.
So whether you're a small business or a large corporation, these are the issues that, you know, we really need to be consciously thinking about.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's the key, making them feel valued. I know years and years ago, it would be, you know, coming up to 20 years now, I was a manager of a retail store and I could tell one of the young girls was having some problems with her boyfriend and she came to work and was all frazzled. And I said, listen, just take the day off and go to the beach. You're not going to lose, you know, I'm not going to use a sick day. You're not going to lose any holiday. But after that, oh my gosh, she was so much more committed because she knew that she was valued.
Absolutely. In fact, I saw on social media, you know, during MasterChef where I get a little distracted and get on Facebook, I was looking at a response that an employer had to a person who had said they'd put out a out of office that they had to take a day off work for a mental health day.
Yes.
And their response back from their employer that the CEO, the owner of the business to them and to the rest of the staff was, thank you so much for sharing that and being open around the importance of mental health. And, you know, you are such a great leader and a role model within our company. And, of course, she shared that on social media. And, of course, then a lot of people then were showing the pretty much alternative responses they got, you know, like, well, hang on a minute, that's, you know, a doona day is really not what the sick leave policy is about, you know, the complete opposite that you'd expect, but is actually not so much a supportive culture. And I think the expectations and the knowledge that we have around recognising too that, you know, again, you know, what we bring to the table as individuals, we're all diverse, we're all trying to do the best we can, and sometimes, you know, there's a mental health issue or you need to have a bit of time out or there's something going on in your life that you need to deal with in order to come back and to be really productive. And, you know, I can hear some people, you know, that I'm thinking of that will say, yeah, but there's people that take advantage of that. Well, when they take advantage of that, you deal with that. But it's a minority.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Of course. I think we, you can't really think of it that way, can you?
Yeah.
No. And as time goes by, you'll work out the people who are genuine and the ones who aren't.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So I've actually, spent some time thinking about this, and there's what I call, there's five key things around making a workforce really flexible. And I think for companies, you know, when there's a need for flexibility in the workforce, make yes the default answer. Yes, we want to be flexible. Put flexibility on the agenda. The leadership have to support it. You know, when we talk about health and well-being and diversity and support and acknowledgement and inclusion in the workplace, the leaders have to be living and breathing that. Otherwise, it's not going to change.
Mm.
Understand that there are options and resources available that enable people to work in a flexible way, and role model it and raise it as a key benefit. And I think we're seeing some businesses in the large spectrum doing that, and we're certainly seeing smaller businesses. And that's that's one of the key reasons women leave the workforce, is for that flexibility.
Mm, wonderful. There's some amazing information we've received in this episode. So thank you so much for joining us on Business Women Australia's radio show. Company Director Lynn Hawkins, proud station sponsor.
Thanks, Sally.